Thanks so much, Scott. And you brought the energy, man. Thank you, right? You just kicked it up a notch, and that's what we like, right? Slow and steady progression to nirvana or explosion. All right, to kick this off, we've got a great keynote. He's talking about managing cyber risks in the interconnected workplace and how it's everybody's responsibility. He's an NBC counterterrorism analyst. He's also a former presidential advisor. And ultimately, he brings his A-game. That's really what it comes down to. And we designed this to really kick it off with a bang and to get everybody on the same page around community. So please give a warm welcome to Mr. Roger Cressy.
I brought the energy. That was well done. Thanks, guy. The way you did that was like, I should be like running down the, let's go, sales team, let's go, let's sell. First of all, it's great to be here, and I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to talk to you today. We all talk about risk and risk management. I've already had my first risk management experience of the morning. I spilled coffee on myself. Now you might say, all right, I can't see it, and that's good because I spilled here and then all the way down my pants, but because my pants are black, you don't know there's coffee there. So I've managed my risk already today in a pretty good way. It's a good start. So I asked Guy, I said, all right, is my job to scare you guys? Because we can always do that. And he said, no. They're smart. They get it. You don't need to scare. I said, all right, we're not going to scare. But I'm going to say a couple things about the threat environment first. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how we're looking at risk management in the space right now. Because the good news is your industry is more aware than it's ever been before on this topic. The bad news is you still have a way to go to inculcate and to bring in the security culture into every element of how you all do your business. And so I think if I was going to give you one takeaway, that's it. There is so much more that needs to be done. And the folks at Microsoft and others are going to give you some fantastic solutions on the technology side. My approach is going to be, whatever the cool tech is, it doesn't absolve all of you and the individuals from your responsibility and accountability when it comes to cybersecurity. So that's the other big takeaway. You are responsible. So let me scare you in like less than 5 minutes. We are now dealing with a threat environment where there is an arms bazaar of attack tools out there. Some of those are from the National Security Agency that were inadvertently sent into the wild. Others are just from some good old-fashioned hard work by hackers, criminal organizations, and others around the world. And the bottom line is, all of them are sharing these tools. They learn from each other. They learn what works, what doesn't. The Director of National Intelligence several years ago testified in front of Congress and said, the bad guys are looking and learning from each other across the spectrum, individuals as well as nation states. They're looking at the TTPs, the tactics, techniques, and procedures that are being used to figure out what works best, where the tools are not being successful, and then they're making changes. And I guarantee you, they are looking at your industry now for the opportunities that they can then exploit. Using some of these tools, and some of these tools are nation state level tools that you will not have a technological solution to deal with. So that gets back to the individual and how we make sure the person is the most important point of security in your organization. So when you talk about tactics, techniques, and procedures, the other thing I like to talk about is strategic reconnaissance. The really good adversary is going to sit on your network and monitor you for a long time. The average length of a reconnaissance by a capable adversary is over 200 days when they're on your network, not when they're just looking at you from the outside. They're on your network for over 200 days. So what does that tell you? It tells you if they're really interested in what you're doing, they're going to watch. They're going to watch, learn, and listen, and then identify when is the right time to try and either exfiltrate the data that they're interested in, that you hold, your IP, or worse, destroy the data that you have. And data destruction and data manipulation are two of the biggest concerns we're seeing now. We've seen it overseas in the Middle East. We've seen it with some of the most recent attacks under NotPetya that hit Maersk and a number of other major corporations. That type of data destruction is a very, very bad development. It's one that we got to pay more and more attention to. ransomware, because I'll talk about that very quickly. So ransomware is the big issue that's in the media right now. It is just the flavor of the day. And if you have vendors who come up to you and say, well, I've got the ransomware solution for you, that's awesome. But that is not the end of the journey. So I want you to understand that whoever is trying to sell you a security solution for a particular point issue, where is that on the spectrum of things you care about? You got to deal with ransomware right now, absolutely. And the FBI has changed its view, basically said, you should pay. And I'm kind of there. You should pay. Unless you've got a backup infrastructure that allows you to basically flip the collective bird at the adversary and say, you know what? I'm not going to pay you three, four bitcoins versus, you know, $50,000, $60,000. Because I can bring everything back up from my backups in 48 hours or less. All the state and localities that are getting hit right now, they can't do that. And that's why, particularly in Florida, they're paying $300,000 and $400,000 on ransomware right now, because they don't have that infrastructure already set. So ransomware is a flavor of the day, but it is not the flavor that should worry you the most over the long term. So now I'm going to give you 7 steps. Usually this is a 10-point plan, but I'm going to give you 7 steps. 7 steps that you should be doing when it comes to how to manage your cyber risk. And these are the messages you should always be prepared to talk to your bosses about. A lot of what we do in our business right now is helping large corporations understand how to manage their cyber risk. And you all have probably heard the concept of people, process, and technology, right? Cybersecurity is about the three. Too often we spend our time focusing on the T and thinking that absolves us of the people and the processes. Your technology can be world class, but if your people aren't trained and your processes stink or are non-existent, that technology will not save you. And that's the message that C-suite leaders have to understand more and more, because they think, well, wait a minute, I've given my CISO and my CIO, you know, 8%, 10% budget boost. They're going to buy the latest IDS, IPS, their security event management software. I'm in good shape because they told me that. What they should be saying is, I'm giving my money to my technologists, but then I'm also training the hell out of all my employees, starting with me down to the first person who is just hired, to make sure they understand the security culture. We're going to get to that in a second. So how do we deal with these issues? First thing you would ask your boss, do you understand your attack surfaces? Your attack surface could be your email, it could be your mobile device, it could be you as an individual. You're all familiar with spear phishing, right? I caught a marlin this, no. It's phishing of you online. Spear phishing is going after you as a specific individual. What's your name?
Tino.
So, Tino, if I'm looking at you, I'm looking at your profile online. You on social media? Do you use Facebook? You use Facebook, okay. So if I'm really good, I'm going to be able to do my reconnaissance on you, because you're probably either the CIO or you're the CMO to the organization. So you know all of what the CEO and the president of the organization are doing. So you're the one I'm going to go after. So I'm going to build a profile on you based on your online activity and behavior. I'm going to try and guess through a series of capabilities what some of your passwords might be based on your likes, your dislikes, your on what you post, etc. And then I'm going to target you specifically with a phishing email. That's a spear phish, because I'm going after you, Tina. Now, the second thing you should tell your boss is that you are a whale. Now, before the boss says, wait, don't insult me like that, you are the whale. So if you think of Moby Dick, Moby Dick was all about getting the big white whale. In cybersecurity and cyber attacks, that's about whaling the boss, which is all about telling the boss, you are a target. You are a target. So if your boss is a whale and understands that he or she is a whale, that's the first step in managing your cyber risk a little bit better. Second question you should be asking them, do you understand your interdependencies? By that I mean, do you understand all the elements within your organization that touch the outside world? This, my friends, is the single biggest opportunity for the bad folks to come in and ruin your day from a cybersecurity perspective. Law firms. Anybody here a lawyer? Awesome. going to tell you a little secret then. Law firms stink at cybersecurity.
They do. They're horrific. And what a lot of bad actors have discovered is, I don't need to get into Amazon or Netflix through the front door. I'm going to target their outside legal counsel, who, by the way, own access to all the intellectual property, to the trade secrets, to all the really nasty, dirty stuff that these organizations don't want to let out, and I'm going to steal it from them. And we have been amazed in our work recently at the amount of law firms that all of a sudden have to discover religion on what they need to be doing on your cybersecurity. So you should be telling your bosses, what are we doing about our outside vendors, not from a specific supply chain, but those people like the law firms that we are dependent upon to make our organization successful? What security requirements are we ensuring they put in place? And what happens if they don't? Are we holding them accountable and responsible? If it's a large law firm, they've gotten much better. But if it's a small and medium firm, they might not know where to start. And it's your job to help them ensure what it is they should be doing from this perspective. So what are your interdependencies? The other one that is really good is M&A. If you're doing any mergers and acquisitions, the bad guys and bad girls, because the black hoodie phenomenon now is both genders and everybody else, right? If I see one more ad with a stupid teenage boy with a hoodie in front of a keyboard with ones and zeros behind him, I'm going to lose my mind. Everybody gets into this space. But this issue of M&A is really, really important because large-scale actors will look at the targets that you're going to acquire and see that as the way to get in to the larger firm. So again, I don't have to deal with Amazon if Amazon's going to acquire Tino's multimedia organization. You have five people, and they're doing M&A on you, and they're going to bring you in, but they've probably already gotten into your network and are sitting there in that 200-day reconnaissance concept that I just talked about, waiting for you to be brought in. And then, they're off to the races. So what are your interdependencies is number two. Number three, are you doing the basics on cyber hygiene? So if we're all football fans, and even if we're not, blocking and tackling is the key to a successful football play. In cybersecurity, the same thing is true. Are you doing the basics? Are you following best practices? Are you following the lessons learned that the Center for Internet Security or SANS with their top 20 list put out there when it comes to passwords, when it comes to phishing, when it comes to authentication? We can spend 30 minutes or more just on the authentication issue. If you're not doing the basics, boss, then you have no one to blame but yourself if you're about to be penetrated and your data is about to be exploited. So are you doing the basics? Very, very important. It's kind of like a BFO, right? And so in DC, everything is an acronym. A BFO is a blinding flash of the obvious. We think we're doing the basics, but often we're not. And we're not doing them all the way down and up the chain. Number four, are you practicing effective risk management? And this is the thing that I think is one of the most important points. Have you integrated risk management into the enterprise? And by that, I mean, we all know what to do after an attack. So there's this whole left and versus right of boom concept, right? If boom is the attack, everyone goes, hires Mandiant or FireEye or Symantec, and they come in and they do the digital forensics and they scrape all the data and they say, aha, this is where the penetration happened. This is the cost of what's just been done, and I'm gonna hoover up all that information and give you a plan to make sure it doesn't happen again. That is failure. Because, to use a gunshot analogy, you don't need a vendor coming into you after you've been shot and said, whew, looks like you've been shot in the arm. I hope that's a flesh wound. No, what you want is you want a process that allows you to understand where the shooter is before they attempt to shoot at you, and you change your behavior to avoid that attempted attack on you. Or if you can't, it minimizes it and turns into the equivalent of a cyber flesh wound. That is cyber risk management. That is cyber resiliency. How do you become resilient in today's world? So I want to make sure that I'm looking not just right of boom after things have happened, but left of boom before an event has happened. And I'm taking steps through my policies and my people, empowered by my technology, to make sure left of boom, I'm far more effective from a risk management perspective.
So that is number four. You got to understand the difference between the two. One statistic, so IBM did a survey about 4 months ago with the Poneman Institution, and of the people in the enterprise space that they interviewed, 77% did not have an incident response plan across their enterprise. And of those that did, only half of them tested it regularly. So there's two failures there. One is, we're not building an incident response plan for what happens if things go south. And worse, we're not exercising it. So if the CEO says, do we have an incident response plan? And you say, yes, boss, we do. The CEO's next question should be, when are we going to test it the next time? And who are we going to bring in to make sure everyone is aware of what their roles and responsibilities are? We did some work in the healthcare industry not too long ago, and we were presented with a stack like this of incident response plans from each element within the organization. And the CEO and the leadership said, we don't know what to do with this, the stack this big. And we said, okay, so we're now going to put a chapeau on top of that that lays out your roles and responsibilities, marketing, security, CFO, general counsel, everyone else, so they now understand this isn't just about the CIO's office doing something with all the response plans. It's understanding everyone has a role and a responsibility in this space. Next one, what are you demanding? And by that I mean secure products versus security products. We in this industry still are in a major deficit when it comes to bringing secure products to market. We do a great job with security products. What we want, though, are those products that come in and are secure from the first moment you plug them in, you connect them, and you access them. This is still a difficult space, but there's no reason, from an infrastructure perspective, you can't ask the people who are buying products, tell me why this is secure as opposed to your competitor's product. Give me the secure to market argument. The secure to market reason why I should be buying this product. Because in your space, everyone is interested in what you're developing. So if you have a product within your infrastructure that is not secure, it's not hardwired, it's not coded properly, then you are injecting something vulnerable into your ecosystem. And that vulnerability just continues to grow over time. So what are you demanding? Demand secure versus just security products. Number six, are you resilient? And this is the other element of cyber risk management. What part of your resiliency are you now educating everyone within your firm on? Resiliency is about a recognition of the obvious. We've talked in this industry for so long, it's not a question of if, but when your network will be penetrated. Your network will be penetrated. If there's a determined adversary with the right capabilities, commitment, and talent, they will get in. I do not care who you're using. From a security perspective, they will get in. So the question of resiliency is, once they're in, what do I do to minimize the impact of that adversary in the network? How do you protect what is most important to your organization? What is that piece of information, that piece of IP, that piece of capability that if it went into the wild would be catastrophic for your organization or for your network that you work with? You protect that first so that if someone does come in and if they can't get at that, then you are resilient. You are dealing with the reality that you have someone inside your network, but they are not impacting you in a way that is catastrophic for your organization. Cyber resiliency is about accepting the inevitable that they will come in and developing the processes, empowering the people with the technology to ensure that resiliency makes your organization tougher and able to continue to provide services and capabilities in the aftermath of an event, no matter how bad, how small, how big it might be. The other thing you should do is understand, I talked about TTPs earlier. No TTP should be successful twice in your industry.
or in any industry. Everyone's going to get lucky once. There's going to be a mistake. Something is going to be exploited. Could be a zero-day attack, and call it what you will. But it should never happen twice. And what we've seen a lot with enterprises is some of the mistakes that are made happen more than once because people aren't doing their job. Why did Equifax take a beating? It was a patch management issue. Patch that was available for a very long time. They were plugging it in, I think it was on Apache software, and at one point they thought it was all done, and it turns out it wasn't, and then everything unraveled from there. And now they just spent almost $750 million saying they're sorry, and brand and reputation impact and the like. It was something that was preventable, but they didn't do it the right way because there was a failure in their people and their processes. So that is a resiliency failure that we all should be able to do a better job on. Another part of resiliency is that the amount of money you spend does not equate in a one-for-one basis on the amount of security you have. If I just had more money, I'd have better security. And no. If I had more money, I could deploy better capabilities and train my people, and that'll make us a little more cyber resilient. But it's not a one-for-one. And what's the thing we see in every industry after they've been breached? The CEO gets up there and they say, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry, that's my Mark Zuckerberg. I'm sorry. We'll do better. We're going to get to privacy at the end of this talk. And they say, but I have good news. We've just doubled our security budget. So my first reaction to that is, my friend, why didn't you double your security budget before you were hacked? Before you had this event. And the reason why is because they didn't think it was a priority. It's only a priority after you've been hit. That is irresponsible. And if I was a shareholder in that company, I'd be pissed 5 times to the wind on it. Let me tell you, that is the wrong way, but it still happens on a regular basis. So dollars do not equal security. And dollars spent after you've been attacked is weak. Because you have failed. You have failed, you failed, you failed. Number 7, are you accountable? And this is the most important one right now. Are you accountable? You could say, well, my bosses are accountable. There's a fiduciary responsibility, publicly traded company. I have shareholders. I have board members. They're all reporting to them. They are accountable. Are you accountable? Do you have cybersecurity as a responsibility in your daily existence within your company? Because if you don't, then your corporation is failing in building a culture of security and a social culture that ensures security is important. When we get on a plane, do we think twice about whether or not that plane is going to do something wrong as it takes off, as it lands in mid-flight? We've kind of made this assumption that because of a infrastructure and a world that ensures these planes are safe, are trustworthy, et cetera, they are going to function. And we go in with an expectation they're going to function properly. Individuals in an enterprise need to have that same type of attitude that I have an expectation to do the right thing when it comes to a security world and a security culture. We take things for granted in aviation. Because of all the things we've done up to this point to make aviation safe, we haven't done the same thing in our companies about being safe on an individual basis when it comes to cybersecurity. So a big part of this is training. Train, train, train. A lot of what we do with our clients is tabletop exercises where we take these response plans, we take the planning assumptions that the information technology staff and others operate under, and we bring them to the C-suite. And then we design exercises around that to test the assumptions and see what works and what goes sideways. And we purposely do it to make sure it goes sideways. Because then you understand your interdependencies. Then you understand who in the supply chain is more of a priority than you thought beforehand. Then you understand why your people need more training so they are more cyber resilient. And then you understand why you, as a C-suite executive, have more responsibility to make training part of your culture. That type of train, train, and train some more is absolutely critical. And too often you see it after there's been an event, the right of boom, you got to do the training left of boom before you're doubling your security budget. Do it left of boom, and you will be more and more prepared. You'll be more resilient. And the last thing that I'll say on this side is, well, let me say one other thing, accountability. Because Office of Personnel Management had a massive breach years ago. And so all the security clearance forms that we all signed up to, all the information we gave, found its way to China. So I joke now when I want to go for a mortgage, I shouldn't be going to a bank. I should just go to the embassy in Washington and ask Beijing if they could give me my most recent information they now hold for my security clearance forms. The head of OPM went in front of Congress and she said, and I quote, "This was really complicated. No one was responsible for this." She got fired. Thankfully, accountability. In the annals of stupid CEO statements, saying no one is responsible for a security breach within your organization ranks right up there with the captain of the Titanic. Oh, that's not a big iceberg. Let's just go right at it. There has to be an acceptance of accountability on the part of the CEO world, as well as all the way down to the individual. All right, I got 5 minutes left. Let me talk a little bit about human culture. I'm going to give you my privacy rant, and then you guys are going to be armed and ready to go for the day. So what do I mean when I talk about human culture in cybersecurity? This is about applying behavioral science to cybersecurity. This is about empowering the individual, the people, as I've talked about earlier, and about how to do a better job in cybersecurity. So the first step is making sure everyone is aware of their responsibility, as I mentioned earlier. You all have a role. And if there's a repeatable message here, that's the one I'm bringing back to you guys. Everyone has a role. And you have to take action to prevent bad things from happening, so you got to be trained. Second part of a human culture is new employees have to be brought in and trained on this issue in a way as you would every other issue that is of importance to your organization. Equal opportunity, sexual harassment, workforce in general, anything related like that, cybersecurity should be part of it. Because cybersecurity is now a fiduciary responsibility for your organization. It should be a responsibility, fiduciary responsibility for the individual. Train at the beginning. And don't do it as a compliance check the box exercise. That is when we fail. Okay, well, I took a test online for 30 minutes and I'm done. Uh-uh. This has to be repeatable, has to be reinforced, and it never, ever ends, unfortunately. It should be a job metric. Proper cybersecurity should be a job metric that you are judged on and you are rated on as any other part of your daily work life. Because if you stink at cybersecurity, you will ultimately cause your organization significant harm and significant financial harm, as well as brand and reputation. So why shouldn't you be judged on your cybersecurity behavior like every other element that you're judged on within your job description? And the last part is develop narratives and storytelling for your employees that stay with them, that stick with them. Find out what it is that is the type of narrative that resonates. So real quick, you guys remember Virgin America, right? Remember they did that awesome, cool, funny video on safety at the beginning? You laughed, you watched, it was kind of like an opera, and they had dancers and everything else. It was catchy, it was kind of bawdy, but it was clever. More people watched that video on safety than anything else any other airline had put on. You heard people laughing as they were watching it because they thought it was clever. That was a narrative. And then what I'd call the airline dorks would then try, United and Delta and American would try and do something clever like that. They just aren't as cool as Richard Branson. I mean, that's just the bottom line. But they learned the lesson and tried. So what is the narrative for your organization? You guys are in the entertainment industry, for God's sakes. You can be clever. Do something clever that allows people in your organization at the bottom, at the top, to have that message stay with them and resonate with them. That is the key part of behavioral science and making you cyber resilient and managing your risk. So I've got less than a minute to talk about privacy. Here's the deal. For years, privacy was an issue that stayed in technical, policy, academic circles, and no one gave a damn about it. They really didn't. The glory of Facebook, the glory of Google, and the mistakes and missteps that have been now exposed is that we now have privacy as an issue in the public debate in a way we never did before. That is a good thing. Do you all care about your privacy? Actually, let me do it a different way. Who here doesn't care about their privacy? It's okay, you can say, yep, there's no privacy. Scott McNeely, 20 years ago, said, get over it. You don't have any privacy. Okay. Do all of you have smartphones? Okay. Have all of you gone to the privacy settings on your smartphones? You have. Okay. Have you reset your advertising identifier on a weekly basis? No. Have you activated your cross-ad tracker minimization? Good. Have you turned off the location services on the 50 apps you have on your... Okay, good, good. We're getting a little better here. Okay. You are now thinking about privacy in a way we never did before, and that is a good thing. But what you also have to understand, you are being tracked online in ways we never even could have predicted 10, 15 years ago. The amount of data that is out there. Does anybody here use a health and wellness app? Okay. Where do you think that data is going? It's being sold. It's being sold. It's being sold to build a profile about you so that organizations can then target ads towards you in a way that you might have a higher degree of clicking on. That's called behavioral advertising. See, in 2006, Google realized all this digital exhaust they had developed from the Google search engine created a business and marketing opportunity for them. And they went from contextual advertising to behavioral advertising. So real fast, contextual advertising is if I go to the New York Times and I read a story on cars and I see an ad for a car, all right, that's cool. But if I read that story and then I go to the Boston Globe's website or ESPN and I keep seeing car ads, I'm being tracked across the internet. That's called behavioral advertising because there are trackers that are installed based on your website experience that allow organizations to collect that data and curate ads for you based on your issue, based on your interests. The average user develops 10,000 trackers a week based on their typical internet usage. 10,000 a week. From a privacy perspective, that should bother you. The question is, what are you going to do about it? And on that note, I wish you the best. Thank you for having me here today, and good luck with the rest of the day's events.